You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Glad to be here, Jim.
Interesting times on the stock markets. How would you describe the action?
Well, we had warned that there could be a bull trap when the Dow Industrials hit 50,000 3 weeks ago, and we're down now about 5,000 points since I put out that warning. We're currently in cash, even with the gold and silver, because they look like they were going to come down too. And, you know, the old expression is you throw the baby out with the bathwater when you get a, you know, get a correction underway. And I think that's really, you know, what this is all about. You know, we had a lot of cycle warnings here from the beginning of the year, talking about the vernal equinox, which we just passed, and, you know, negative cycles indicating, you know, the potential of correction. And we have our chart patterns in the S&P that said, you know, we had a potential drop down to about that 650 level, 6,500 level. 650 is in the SPY, that's the ETF. So we're heading down here. It doesn't have to happen now. I mean, they could delay it. There could be some, you know, news from Iran and they rally them again and come down in a few weeks. But I still think we're in a corrective phase. Market's overdone to the upside. And we've seen some really big name stocks like Microsoft down 30% from its high. And, you know, it's been, you know, it's really been a bear market since fall when some of the Mag 7 stocks, you know, start to come in. So very selective in what we're trading because of the environment. Oil continues to show resiliency. I have to admit, we got out of our oil a bit early. We were long names like Chevron and so forth, and they continued to move higher with the Iranian news. But we caught, you know, at least a piece of it in the last few weeks. Very tough chasing something, you know, when it's up this much. But I guess it could go even higher if the news environment deteriorates. So it's a good time to be, you know, in cash, treasury bills, or short if you're playing the inverse indexes like we are. We, you know, we're short the S&P, and we've been short the all-time favorite NVIDIA, which everybody loves, using the inverse ETF at. And outside of that, we're pretty much in cash here, waiting for a signal of some kind. Crypto held up a little bit relative to the rest of the market, but it still has some downside risk. Everybody's waiting for the Clarity Act to be passed in Congress, and we don't know when that's going to happen. There's been speculation for months. It could be now or April, and supposedly institutions will come in and do some buying of crypto. If that happens, we'll have to wait and see. And so much nonsense going on politically. You know, you have the Democratic Party in this country, in my opinion, who are insane, you know, who don't want people to show identification when they vote, when they have to show IDs for everything else, and holding up security at the airports. And it's such a political mess here in the U.S. It's just over the top. I mean, it just, you know, subversion beyond belief. So I know people don't like to talk about politics here, but, you know, when people act as incoherent and biased is what's happening here, it's just tough not to be upset about it. So not much I can do, but maybe that's what the markets are telling us, that you have a mixed up political system here, you know, those that want to bring it down, and that's not a good environment for investing. And then you've got the war going on. So anyway, just a lot of cross currents here, but I think it's a good time to be patient, you know, and be, you know, out of the market or short until you get clear signals otherwise. I mean, we had a huge run here last year, and you know, we have to pay the piper at some point.
Gold and silver, what's going on there?
Same story, you know. They throw the baby out with the bathwater. I mean, history says that when you get huge corrections in the markets, generally everything comes down in this environment. The exception has been crude oil because of the Iranian story. I mentioned I was interviewed about this back in January on the Mike Campbell show. I mean, basically, this is when silver was taking off to the upside, and I said, well, maybe it's going to go to 100, but it's going to go back to 50 anyway at some point because that's a corrective level. So I think that's what's happening here. So it went over 100, went to 120. Now it's around the mid-60s, and 50 is the old breakout point. So I would think you would go back there. And gold has a number as low as about 3,500. These are not guaranteed levels. This is what the charts say is possible. So it could do that. I'm a long-term bull on gold and silver, but I've been that way since the 1980s. So, you know, that's 45 years of holding gold and silver. So if you have a lifetime of patience, I mean, that's sort of the joke about gold and silver. I mean, you know, you could have asked me the same question in 1980, and I have told you the same things now. I'm bullish, it can go up. Maybe it'll see 2,000, 5,000, 10,000 at some point in the future. So your whole lifetime, you wait for it to finally happen. So it's tough to make a living or trade doing it, I suppose, if you're just putting it away for your kids or grandkids, you don't care. But the charts say, you know, that's your risk down about 3,550 in silver, and we'll see. You know, if it gets there, you know, what the strategy is. But the companies themselves, you know, the big name, Agnico Eagle, Newmont Mining, all the big gold and silver companies, First Majestic Silver, just throw out some names. I mean, basically, they're still dealing with gold and silver prices much higher than we've seen in recent years. So in theory, these companies can still make money, and there still should be, you know, potential in some of these stocks. Even if gold and silver pulled off their highs, they're still much, much higher than they had been. And, you know, therefore should, you know, there should be greater, you know, profitability in the sale of the metals and so forth. So keeping an eye on those as well.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovitz right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovitz. Mark, space, what's going on up there?
Well, SpaceX, Elon Musk's company, is a hot story on Wall Street. There was some story out today that he may offer about 30% of it to the public, which I'm not quite sure how that would be, whether it would be, you know, a crowdfunding type offering or some way where the average person could come in and take a piece of it. But supposedly this is going to be the biggest public offering of all time, possibly to up to $1 trillion or more in valuation. You know, when you think about it, I mean, what value do you put on, you know, a company that's going to Mars and other planets and has been way ahead of what we've seen in terms of technology as compared to NASA and everything, you know, particularly with these rockets that come back and are reusable and so forth. So this has been pending for a while. Now, that this doesn't have anything to do with Starlink or Tesla, but maybe there is some combination. There were also stories in recent months that some Tesla shareholders might directly or indirectly benefit from the SpaceX offering. So what's happening now is they're putting together, you know, a public offering for SpaceX. Again, it's astronomical numbers in terms of the capital that's going to be raised. And like I say, there really is no number or target that's high enough. I mean, if you look it out for years to come, I mean, a company that's exploring the galaxy, the solar system, and doing all kinds of unbelievable things scientifically, you know, and the amount of money that would be spent and fully retrieved from those type of ventures, you know, bases on the moon and Mars, and, you know, what type of revenue that could come out of all that. Of course, we know the government's going to be spending a lot of money and so forth, but, you know, there could be, you know, minerals retrieved from asteroids, moon, Mars, all kinds of things that could generate income. But regardless of that, you know, just funding it and the government support of it is going to generate, you know, a lot of income. So, big story. If you didn't get in on the private deal, you know, there's a lot of institutions. Some of the big companies, I think Google has a position in SpaceX. So you can buy Google stock and have a very small participation, but there are some, there is one particular name that's in our recommended list. So if you subscribe, you'll see that it has a private position in SpaceX, which in theory would benefit once the offering trades and hopefully trades higher. And then, like I said, there's a story today about Musk offering it to the public, and I'm not quite sure the vehicle, how that would happen, but that's going to generate a lot of excitement. So, you know, it's going to be a lot of fun trading this thing and seeing where it's priced and valuation and, you know, where it actually trades after market and so forth. And we don't know the exact timing. You know, they put together the IPO. Was it going to actually come out in 3 months or the end of the year or early next year? And, you know, I don't know, the timing of it, I guess, has a lot to do with going on in the overall markets and stuff. But generating a lot of interest and excitement. And we've known that this was coming at some point. But just the fact it's the biggest IPO ever, you know, is definitely a story worth telling.
Are you looking at defensive stocks? The company now known as RTX. It used to be Raytheon, the guys who make the Patriot missiles, because they're using an awful lot of them right now.
Right. I mean, they're plays. I mean, they've made big moves, and they've come off their highs a little bit. You know, the market sort of discounts this stuff, too. I don't know if I'd be chasing them here. It's like chasing crude oil here. You know, you might see, you know, crude oil back up, and some have been speculating crude oil and get to $200 or some number. I mean, anything is possible. You know, it's worth a shot if you're, you know, if you really want to look beyond the very short term. I mean, as a trader, I'd like to see a pullback in some of these. You know, there's some stocks like Boeing, which is not so much defense, but they make aircraft. Their stock is cheap compared to where it's been, but, you know, maybe a company like that could indirectly benefit, I suppose, and if they get involved in some aerospace or other contracts, which is speculation on my part. But the big names like Raytheon and, you know, Lockheed Martin and, you know, McDonnell Douglas and all the big names out there, you know, have already had some moves. So, you know, I think you're a little late in the game if you're looking for huge gains here. But, yeah, definitely if things prolong and go on for a while, there might be some money to be made. But I like to buy pullbacks. You know, when I mentioned the Boeing just a moment ago, the stock's way off its highs, for example. You know, that made a lot more sense to me. You know, Home Depot, for example, it's way down from off its highs, and at some point, if you know, the market turns around and construction starts to come back, and home was building or government support of renovation of the home building industry begins, a company like that could do really well. You know, so I like to buy them when they're down rather than when they're already at new highs. But you know, I appreciate you mentioning it. I just don't have a lot of excitement about it at these levels.
Are there any so-called safe havens like treasury bills in times like this?
Yeah, well, we hope they are. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a whole theory out there, you know, government debt is not so safe. You know, I mean, the government is essentially bankrupt now on a certain level. I mean, the trillions that we're in debt, how are we going to repay all this? We seem to be increasing the debt constantly. And, you know, there is a valid theory out there that at some point, you know, government debt is not the safest place to be. Short term, that's the, you know, I'm sure that's the case, at least for a while. But the answer is yes. I mean, I have a lot of stuff in personal money and treasury bills just because you have to park it somewhere and you don't want to just stick it in a checking account where you're not earning any interest. But long term, there is a valid question how safe government debt is. So I'm not too inclined to be buying 10-year, 20-year bonds or anything like that. Only treasury bills that, you know, 30 days to a year or 90 days to a year type investment. But, you know, you could say real assets are still, I guess, the safest long-term place. And going back to the gold and silver, I mean, you know, if you're taking multi-decade viewpoints, they're safe. And real estate, I mean, it seems to double every 20 years or so, and even though it's not as liquid this moment, there's still very hot markets in real estate around the country and safer places that people want to live, particularly here in the U.S. Many people are leaving the so-called blue states, the Democrat states like California, New York, and Michigan, and then moving to places like here in Arizona or Florida, and those prices seem to be holding up well. And regardless of the political statement I made, you know, long-term real estate is somewhat of a safe haven if you can just weather the fluctuations as we've seen even in the metals. So I would say treasuries, real estate, gold and silver are safer, you know, overall, but you know, they trade like anything else. So the best answer to your question is probably just treasury bills short term, and you know, picking some individual situations like this SpaceX thing that we just discussed, you know, something where there's investor interest and action that is tradable. And I guess if you're really super aggressive and you want to trade some crude oil, hoping you can catch another wave up in it, that's always possible. But I'm not currently in it. I'm just watching.
Mm-hmm. So what's do you have any feeling what the goal of the Iran war is and what the outcome will mean for the stock markets?
Oh, tough question. I'm not so optimistic about the outcome of the thing. You're asking me, you know, sort of a political, you know, geopolitical comment. I mean, you know, I think that, you know, unless the regime really changes over there, and it doesn't appear so likely that's happening, and you've got Russia, you know, Vladimir Putin out there supposedly supporting their existence to a certain degree. You're hearing stories about that. I mean, you really need a major change there. I mean, you got to have, it's like the Shah of Iran has to return, or his descendant, and take over the country, and you have to get rid of the Revolutionary Guard and all the fanatics over there, because, you know, they're hell-bent on destroying Israel and the U.S. and apparently even their neighbors in the Gulf states. So, you know, unless we get reports that there's been, you know, who knows, you know, this thing really could accelerate. I mean, we're talking about sending troops now to that island in the Strait of Hormuz. And, you know, it seems to me, unfortunately, you'd have to have a ground invasion of Iran and really kick out those Iranian militants to really turn things around, unless they surrender before that. I mean, where we were sort of hoping, like that vision, remember, from years ago when Japan surrendered after World War II, and they're on that battleship and General MacArthur is there, and they signed, you know, surrender. I mean, that's what we really need to have happen to hope for peace and stability in that part of the world, and it doesn't appear they're so eager to make that happen. So I'm not so much an optimist. I think you got a lot of tenacious enemies over there, and you know, they've been preparing for years for something like this. You know, there could be secret cells all over North America. There could be all kinds of stuff that we don't even know about yet. And, you know, God forbid, they had already produced an atomic weapon that we never found, and somebody sets it off. You know, and you got Pakistan next door with atomic weapons. And, you know, there's a lot of risk here. I mean, you can't exclude the possibility. I mean, this is just a geopolitical comment, that some atomic bomb gets set off intentionally or accidentally during this whole process, which really is a one hell of a can of worms for the world. So, meanwhile, maybe that's what the markets are telling us. I mean, everything is coming in. There's a lot of nervousness around. We knew there was a correction coming, and, you know, we're just in a retracement phase for a while, but we try to be optimistic, you know, long term, and at the moment there's, I believe, you know, greater value in being a little bit more pessimistic until you get some real confirmation things have turned around, Jim. So anyway, just have to take it a day at a time. I mean, there's also potential risk of food and water shortages and stuff. We already hear the stories about your gasoline going up in price, and you know, food prices going up and so forth. I mean, if things get worse, there could be risk of famine in certain parts of the world, you know, shortage of food and other needed supplies. So hopefully none of that happens. These are just things in the back of your mind that you hope don't materialize. But the forces are in place now where that could theoretically happen, and we pray that it doesn't.
Anything happening on the geocosmic front?
Always something going on there. We had a lot of solar activity here just recently. We had some of these space, these little meteor attacks, so to speak, all over North America. There's a chart actually on spaceweather.com, a lot of these little meteors coming down. You have to go to my website and pull up my newsletter to see the articles about that. And, you know, we're just theoretically coming out of this March and now coming into April negative cyclical period. There's a lot of history that April has a lot of negative events historically, and there's a whole article that I'm going to put in the newsletter about all the negative events that have happened in April. But generally, it's that late March period, and we're certainly in there now, that we tend to look for, you know, bottoming action in the markets or the culmination of negative activity. So again, that's, I think, tied a lot to the vernal equinox. And and outside of that, you know, many track the Mercury retrograde phenomenon, which there was actually an article in Forbes magazine about it a few weeks ago, which just surprised me. Apparently, a lot of people have been talking about it, and I've been aware of it as many others for many, many decades. It's just it's sort of a non-scientific event when you look at the skies from the astrological point of view. Friends of mine who are astrologers have been telling me about this forever. You know, we're in the, from Earth's point of view, it looks like Mercury is moving backwards when it really isn't. They turn a retrograde motion, but apparently relative to that motion, there are cyclical tie-ins where markets or things tend to happen or go in reverse or stop happening during those Mercury motions, which just ended a few days ago. There's another one coming up in about 2 or 3 months. So that's sort of, you know, looking at the geocosmic stuff that a lot of the cycle people look at and I've been exposed to over the decades. You know, this all started for me when I was on the floor, a floor trader on the Chicago Options Exchange many years ago. And it's hard for people to believe this because, you know, they look at the markets as just a bunch of accountants or very stern, financial-oriented people involved. But no, I ran into a bunch of astrologers trading on the floor of the exchange, and many of them have been on CNBC and the networks for years. They don't have them on anymore, but they influenced a lot of traders. And when I was down there, I learned a little bit about what they were doing and found out there's some correlations to their analysis to what actually has been happening in the market. So no one wants to talk about it, but there actually is correlation factors, and we've talked about it in our newsletter, and I credit a lot of our excellent calls in the market here to the fact that both my volume work was negative and the cyclical picture was negative, and a lot of this tied to some of these astro cycles that officially everybody dismisses, but been around for thousands of years, and smart people at least look at it and check to see if there's some correlations, which we have. So they're still there. We seem to be coming out of them, to answer your question. But, you know, it's like the weatherman making a forecast, and he looks at all his charts. But just before he goes on the air with his weather forecast, he opens the window and looks out the window to make sure that what he's forecasting even relates to the reality of what's outside the window. That's the same thing with all this analysis. You do all this analysis, but you want to look at the short-term patterns as they're unfolding to see if they confirm what your analysis says is happening. So that's what we have to do here day to day, that we have all these negative numbers and theories about, you know, the market being down this time of year and it should come out of it. But until you get confirmation of that, you have to be careful. So it could change tomorrow, it could change in a month. And until that time, you have to be cautious.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. Find us on X at How Street. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. You can also find us on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.